Welcome to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. I am thrilled to announce our 2025 virtual MTSS Summit happening this December. This two-day event is all about MTSS innovation with intention, where we will dive into bold ideas and practical strategies to ensure every student is supported and every educator is equipped to succeed. Join a international community of educators and leaders to explore how intentionality and innovation can drive meaningful change in MTSS implementation. You won't want to miss this incredible opportunity to connect and grow. Supporting student needs across a diverse school district is a challenge many leaders face, and there often isn't a secret or a magic bullet that makes the difference, but it's just the consistent hard work of building a strong system of support. And so today we are chatting with Katie and Tricia from Community Consolidated School District 59 in the suburbs of Chicago. And we're going to chat about all of their hard work that they've been doing in their district to support students. So welcome to the podcast, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, and our audience may or may not know this, but Tricia, this is her second time on the podcast. It was 3 years ago, I think around this time, that I chatted with what they were doing in their district. So it was so fun to like follow up and learn more about
what you're doing. A little bit.
It does feel like yesterday. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and have you introduce yourself, Katie, and then as Tricia as well. So for our listeners.
Sure thing. My name is Dr. Katie Ossel. I am currently the Assistant Superintendent of Student Services and Support for Community Consolidated School District 59. My background is in special education and alternative education, and I have been a junior high assistant principal, director of social emotional learning, and then, you know, once at the district level, just took on many different hats. And so currently I oversee our multi-tier system of support, social emotional learning and student behavior, school safety and security, and educational services.
So just a little bit of
just a little
things.
Bit. Yep. It's an awesome job. I love doing it.
Yeah, and I'm Tricia Sunny. I'm the coordinator for assessment and MTSS in District 59. I've been in District 59 my entire career. I started off as a special education resource teacher. I then was selected to be a district-wide facilitator in problem-solving for students with learning and behavioral needs. I think that's really where my passion for MTSS came from, and then I took on this role. So I lead all things assessment and MTSS and try to ensure that we have time, space, resources, and staff to meet the needs of all students.
So first of all, I would love for you to tell our audience a little bit about your district and what makes it unique and what are the specific challenges and opportunities you guys have to support students.
Absolutely. So District 59 is a district of 15 schools. We have pre-kindergarten through eighth grade students, and we're located in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. It's a unique place. We have about 6,000 students, and we have a very high population of English learners in our district. We have about half of our students who are English learners. And we also have about half of our students who are low income and have had a large influx of newcomers over the last few years, as I know many have. Some of our schools have up to half of their students are newcomers. So we have a lot of needs in our district, but we're also very well resourced. And so we have figured out different ways to make sure that we are matching our resources to our needs and are excited to talk about it today.
Well, thank you so much for both of you for being here and telling us a little bit about your district. I know your district kind of sums up a lot of different needs that we see in school districts across the country. And we know that, you know, every district has its unique hurdles, but some of them are in common. So for you guys in the last few years, what were some of those biggest hurdles that your district was facing to ensure that students' needs were being met and they received the supports that they needed?
So I think, you know, we have been in a unique situation where we deviated from our core curriculum entirely post-pandemic. And so we were adopting new curricular resources in math, ELA, social studies, science, really moving all of our tier one curricular materials and shifting entirely. So that was a massive transition. And at the same time, we had a significant amount of students who were needing intervention and were qualifying for intervention. So, you know, we fell into that category of the upside down triangle, or however you want to phrase it. But we really were doing everything all at once to try and recoup and get our students on track and get our multi-tiered system of support balanced. So, you know, that is what we have been facing in terms of the context. And at the same time, as I stated before, we had lots of students moving into the district, newcomers, and lots of language needs. So, you know, we have over 70 languages spoken. So we had that unique aspect to our intervention as well, as considering what is an academic need versus what is a language acquisition need, and how do we make those choices. So, you know, to sum up, we had changes in all of tier one, and we had changes in all of intervention occurring at the same time, trying to rebuild our systems and get our students on track. And, you know, another really big piece is in our district, we have some significant differences between our buildings. And I know Trisha mm-hmm. can speak to that a little bit more, but we have buildings that have small amounts of students, large amounts of students, that have different populations of students and that have significantly different needs. I don't know if Trisha, you want to give a couple examples for the listeners.
Yeah, you know, I think as we were launching all new core curriculum for all of our different instructional programming, and also from my lens, really diving into what support and intervention resources do we have, we found that, you know, a one size fits all is not going to work. Our schools varied so much in terms of what programming they house, different clusters of demographics, you know, with different needs, the size difference, you know, as Katie said. And so when we started looking at intervention needs, for example, we noticed that school A at that time had 29 students recommended for reading intervention compared to school B that had 127 students recommended for reading intervention just two blocks away. So really developing a one size fits all system we knew wasn't going to work. And we really had to start thinking about how are we going to design systems and structures that are going to meet the needs of everyone, considering the different needs across the district.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a really big challenge to like the varying needs of the school. And it, you know, it plays into personnel, where do you send people, resources that you have available. And so I'm sure that that was like a big, you know, problem that you needed to tackle. In all of the work that you were doing, was there a specific moment or initiative that you felt like was a turning point in your district's success with MTSS? Because all of this sort of plays into like building that system, like you mentioned. What has made the difference in your work?
Yeah, I think I'd have to say at that time that we were rebuilding and really laying the whole district out there and acknowledging the big differences that we had and realizing that our current systems specific to resource allocation were not structured in a way that were equitable at all. So I briefly described school A with 29 students needing reading support compared to school B with 120 some. Everybody at that time got the same amount of support. Every school, regardless of need, had one literacy interventionist, one math interventionist, one social worker, one psychologist, if available. And it just, you know, I think the first thing was recognizing this doesn't make sense. This isn't going to work. It's likely not working. And just putting that truth out there and getting everybody to acknowledge, recognize, and commit to, we need to do things differently.
How did the conversation go with staff? And like, as you made those changes, was like, cause I just asked that because we can say, oh, we had conversations around it, but I imagine that may have ruffled feathers, or that it was kind of a tough conversation.
Absolutely. I was just, talking with Katie the other day about a moment that really stuck out to me about when we first, you know, became transparent across schools. I didn't realize how much our building administrators knew their building story so well, but really had no idea of the details going on at the building, even sometimes just down the road. And so we started with just sharing caseload numbers, the number of students in need by building. And I remember the principal of a building who had a smaller amount of students looking to a colleague, a friend of another building that had a high number of needs, and literally asking, "So how do you do that?" And his response was, "We don't. We prioritize who we can reach now, and there are students that we wait and we hope to get them eventually." And that other principal had no idea. So I think getting everybody to understand the realities and how different each building really was, and recognizing that things are so different building to building, really made us realize that as a district, as one unit, we needed to commit to doing better.
Yeah, and I'll also add to that, that is something that was not done in isolation, and I don't think could be done in isolation, because if it truly were just Tricia saying, "Hey, we need to operate as one district and we're going to change the way we do just intervention and look at this differently," I don't know that we could be as successful as we were. But we also had all of our departments understanding that we are going to start taking a one district approach, and we are really going to look at inequities and where they lie in various areas. So we also looked at transportation, and we looked at tier one needs, and we looked at staffing, and we looked at funding, and what was different between our buildings. And so that conversation was also taking place on a broader level, which then gave the floor for Tricia to say, "Hey, let's dig into intervention here and see how that varies between buildings and see if what we're doing is meeting the needs as a district or not," which really launched that next phase. And for sure, it ruffled feathers because, you know, we have people who worked at the same building for 20 years, and the thought of something changing or the system changing or resources changing could be very scary. We're talking about their experiences and their day-to-day and what that looks like. So it was a lot of conversation over a long period of time with various groups, and repeating the message that we need to make sure we get to every learner, and we can do it if we come together and look collectively at this issue, that I think made it more successful in the end.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's so important, you know, when you're implementing MTSS, that it can't sort of be done in the, especially if it's a district-wide approach, like you can't do it in silos of, you know, just one building over the other. And so in order, you know, if you're acting as one district, like how important it is to do that work together. I appreciate you talking about how like sometimes that messaging has to like happen multiple times in multiple kind of contexts, and, you know, really helping people understand the root of the problem. So when you, when we're talking about this a little bit of like, how did you go about creating some of these systems? You know, you talked about, you looked at transportation, you looked at other things. How did you make sure that like you were really meeting every single student? And there were none that fell through the cracks. I mean, I'd say that in caveat of, I know that no system is perfect, but what was your approach?
Yeah. So first we started studying what it currently looked at. We looked at of the students whose evidence showed that they needed intervention, who was getting served and who wasn't. And what we found was that, you know, at some schools that had smaller numbers of need, they were able to extend their support and intervention all the way up to students performing up into the 40th percentile. Where at the schools who had higher needs, they were forced to prioritize. So they really prioritize students with the heaviest needs at tier three, and they allocated as much resource as they could, and found that they never really got to be preventative at all. They were not able to provide tier two supplemental support, and oftentimes those students that started out as tier two found themselves later at tier three. So it was kind of this cycle that these certain schools were not able to get out of, and then other schools were able to extend to students who were performing, you know, probably just fine with just classroom supports, but they were able to do so. We also acknowledged just the sheer number coming out of the pandemic and moving away from some curriculum that was not found to be as effective as we had hoped with certain populations, especially. And looking at the sheer volume and recognizing that some of our resources that we had at the time were designed to be delivered only in really small group settings. So we went out and did the research of what types of resources are out there, are designed to be effective and intensive, but also can be delivered to larger groups of students, because that was our reality at the time. We then did a lot of studying around what ideal group sizes were and those kinds of pieces, and then figured out what size of a district team would we need to get out there and do this work so that we could then allocate that by building based on need.
Wow. That's a, I mean, but I feel like all of that background work is so important to do, to really study your data and what is it telling you in order to make those decisions. I think many districts, you know, you talk about curriculum and really identifying, hey, this curriculum is not working for us. And I've been on those curriculum committees where you make the best guess of the available resources that you have. And then when you find that it doesn't work, it's really hard to abandon something that you've invested a lot of money in. So I'm sure that that's a tough conversation, especially if people are attached to it, get attached to it.
Yeah. But I think going through that has also helped us be better at that evaluation process moving forward, because, you know, we figured out what were the most pervasive skills we were finding we were needing to provide intervention in. We did the research, we bought, you know, programs and resources that were going to address those. And the reality is that not all of those got the results that we had hoped that they would. But now we're comfortable, you know, not taking that information as personally as we, you know, maybe would sometimes before, and recognizing that it's okay to evaluate something off of our menu and look for something that's a little better because it's based off of the needs of our students. And we just need to recognize when things are working and when they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something that Tricia has done really beautifully with these teams that she's working with is she sets it up with them from the beginning. So this is not something that we decide. It's not Katie and Tricia picked this program and we're going to use it from now on because we think it's the best. She's with her teams of interventionists very regularly saying, you know, what are we committing to and what's driving our need to change? And then what are we choosing and why? So, you know, at the very beginning of all of this, our question was if child goes to school A and can receive intervention and then moves and goes to school B and is not allowed to have intervention, and it's the same child with the same needs, are we okay with that or are we not okay with that? Mm. And everyone agreed, we are not okay with that. That is not what we want for our district. So if at that moment we've got the agreement and the commitment, then we know change needs to happen. And the same happened with the resources of here are the results that we're getting with the resources that we have. Are we okay with this or not? No, we're not. Okay, then we know change needs to happen. And those are the important leadership pieces, I think, that helped move us along, because our staff didn't feel that we were doing anything to them. We were coming together to name the inequity and name the problem and then choose to pursue a solution together and really work through that along the way. So there's lots of opportunities for feedback. There's lots of opportunities to evaluate the data together and say what's working, what's not working. And when we bring people along from the beginning as part of the process, then it's more successful in the end. And I think that's how we went about changing resource allocation, which we knew would be a huge shift for people. They were with us every step of the way. We were communicating constantly and saying, could it work? Could it not work? Why do we think it might? Why do we think it might not? And let's get ahead of every step that we can with really clear communication to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely would appreciate that, you know, as if a leader came and said, let's work through this problem together and have an agreement. Because oftentimes, you know, if there's conflict or if there's hard conversations, really starting from the point that we agree that this is not okay, that these students aren't getting the help that they need. So let's move from that point of commonality. So I appreciate that.
Sticking to the truths and the realities of the situation is the foundation of the conversation. You know, we had a lot, we pulled our winter data that year that we were rethinking how we were going to do things the following year, and just spoke about the realities across the district building to building as an entire administrative team. The reality is we have these programs to support reading. They require this group size. here's the need at each building. This is the amount of people this is going to require. It really got them to see which buildings may at that time have been a little overstaffed versus those who have been understaffed. So even though the writing may have been on the wall that some people were going to have less potentially moving into the future and other people were going to be getting more, it was numbers driven. It was factual. It was reality based. And I think that was easier to accept because everybody knows that your needs ebb and flow and that, you know, if we're one team working together, it's likely down the road that I'm going to need the support at some point and it'll be there for me when I'm ready.
So you talked a lot about this collaboration. What role did that play, whether even just amongst your staff, families, or even community? How did that come into play when it came to overcoming some of these challenges and driving the success that you're seeing now?
I think, you know, we have lots of different contributors to this conversation, you know, from the Board of Education who, you know, we were talking to about allocations and FTEs and do we need more people in more positions to support this work, you know, down to every student and their family. And everyone in between. So, you know, there's quite a few people involved in the conversation. What it took was really clear communication at every stage, right? Mm-hmm. So when we began exploring it, we were letting everyone know, here's what we're exploring and why. When we named the problem, when we started seeking solutions, when we chose certain resources. So we had a really high level of both verbal and written communication going out. And we had cascading messages with our building. So, you know, we would meet with our administrative team. Our administrative team would meet with their staff. We would have job-alike groups coming together and we were sharing the same message. I'm sharing the same message with the superintendent and the board. So, you know, when we would reach a new point in any change that was happening, we would make sure that that was broadly communicated and that everyone at each level had an understanding of why. That even came with family communications about what resources we're using for their child for intervention and how often are we going to update and what's that update going to look and sound like? Where will it happen? So I think, you know, that is really what it took, is a very clear communication plan for all contributors that was happening simultaneously and in different modes and formats to understand the why behind the changes, because no one likes when change is done to them and they don't understand the purpose behind it. That's what makes it most difficult. So from my point of view, I think that's what it took to make it successful. And then, you know, once we reallocated, when we really said, okay, now is the point, we've talked about it and we are reassigning people and here's the school that you, interventionist A, are going to be at next year and here's why, and here's where you're going to be, interventionist B, and here's why. You know, that wasn't easy work and there's a real human element to it. You're moving people from their work family that they know and from what they've been comfortable with for some time and asking them to do and try new things. So there's a lot of support that goes into that, a lot of coaching. You know, Trisha's out in schools and seeing what's happening and problem solving and helping and bringing professional learning in for that group. So, you know, it's not just making the change and then the change is done. Then it's supporting it all the way through and evaluating what was successful. So we had to then report out on, now that the shift has happened, what are we seeing as a result? And was it worth it? And for us, it was absolutely worth it. And we started seeing gains right away and have seen gains since. So, you know, being able to then report that back and kind of, you know, hold that data up to say, we know this was really difficult. We know we asked you to do big things and make big changes. And here are the student outcomes that are now associated with it. It really lifted our system and continued to lift our system. And that has an impact. You know, the biggest impact, of course, is on our students and their growth and their learning, but it also has a huge impact on morale, on teacher competence and confidence in what they're doing, mm-hmm. On our collaborative, you know, practices as a team and how we support students. And that lifts our entire multi-tiered system of support. So there's big outcomes there that I think it's really important to then reflect back to the people doing the work so that they can mm-hmm. see that this change was worthwhile.
What were some of the successes? I want to hear about, you're seeing the gains. Tell me more.
Yeah, so I could share some of the results that we've seen. So back in the fall of 22-23, We had around 1,300 students across the district needing reading intervention. As of fall 2025, that is down to 709 students. So we almost cut that number in half, or well on our way to at least. And then just to give you an idea of, in terms of intervention provision, back in that first fall of 22-23, of the students that needed intervention, we were only able to provide it to 62% of those students. Wow. As of this fall, we are at 97% of students identified as needing reading intervention have a documented plan.
That's amazing.
And then the same on the math side, we had 1,358 students needing math intervention in fall of 22-23. We are now down to 794, and our intervention provision rates that started at 52% of students needing math intervention were able to receive it before the change. As of this fall, we are also up to 97% of those students receiving intervention as of this fall in math.
Wow. That's amazing to see that the fact of like the work that it takes to make sure that students are getting the help that they need.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wish I could give all the credit to intervention. I am so lucky to work with the best team and they work so hard. But the reality is those numbers are from all of our system structures and departments working together towards a common goal. We needed to improve our student achievement. We needed to talk about our universal, you know, instruction and all of those pieces working together and making sure that the intervention systems worked alongside it. And I think that's why we are where we are today.
So in that though, I'm sure that then that because students are getting the help that they need, have you then seen the uptick of scores or growth in reading and math?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been pretty exciting. We're very proud. You know, we have measured through our strategic plan. We set the goal of having 80% of our students at the 25th percentile or above, so performing in what we would say is a typical range by the end of our five-year plan, and we are almost there. So we've risen significantly. I'm sure Tricia knows the numbers. I do not know the numbers off the top of my head, but it has been a massive increase, and we're almost at the point of meeting that goal and then setting a new goal for our district. So it's really exciting work.
And I love that you mentioned that how much that seeing those successes impacts sort of the morale around the changes, right? It's that collective efficacy, right? When you're seeing the work and you're working together and you see how much it impacts, you're more likely to feel confident and want to invest in the work more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't pretend to have all the answers by any means. And the interventionist team really helped define how we divide and conquer the caseloads that are in front of us. And some of the team has really stepped up to be teacher leaders and have owned certain strategies and resources in programming and are helping boost the skills of others. And they're leaders, they're confident in their work, they're proud of their work as they should be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And I love hearing the stories because I'm just thinking, Tricia, back to our conversation we had, I think it was like fall of 2022. And we talked about, you know, just some of that initial, I think I remember you saying you spent a lot of time admiring the problem, but not taking action. And it really sounds like in the last 3 years, you guys have really taken the action to do something about the problem. You're not just looking at it, but really taking the action. And so it's just really fun to hear then what it means, what happens after you take the action, and really what can happen if you work together and come together as one district and really make those intentional things. All of the stuff that you talked about, sort of just the leadership. I'm so excited to share this with our audience because one, it gives encouragement to the people who are in it in the middle of doing the work, how that consistent hard work and making choices for what students need really makes the big difference. So reflecting on this journey, what are you most proud of and what's next?
You know, I think that when we did the first podcast, we were at the point where we were recognizing our inequities, right? We were done admiring the problem and ready to kind of be brave and propose some of these major changes. And I think that if I were to listen back to that, I'd probably hear some fear in my voice, knowing the ideas that were in our head. I think I'm just most proud that even when things got tough and challenges presented themselves, we, as a team across the district, stayed committed and we got the results that we were hoping for. And we're never, our work is never done. I don't know that I imagined we'd be here already, but I'm super proud that we are. So I think I'm just most proud that we stayed committed. We worked through the hard stuff. We navigated tough conversations. And I really feel like we are in a place now, at least for resource allocation, where when we have this conversation every year, the administrators going into it and the team going into it know that we're going to make these decisions based off of student needs first. And we're committed to live in the uncomfortable if we need to.
Yeah. What about you, Katie?
That was so well said, Tricia. I agree. I am also really proud that I think we work hard to mirror what we expect of our staff at the district level. So, you know, we are asking our teams at the building level to constantly be in that cycle of evaluating student data and making instructional decisions for the best possible outcomes for students. And at the district level, it's the same for us. We are consistently coming together to review our data, to look at what we are providing to serve our staff so that they can serve students. And we are reevaluating that, and we're looking at it on an ongoing basis. So even with our resource allocation, Tricia and I start every January, and we go back to the numbers and who are our students who need interventions and where are they located and what does our staffing look like and what changes do we see for the upcoming school year? You know, that is an annual cycle for us, and it's not done in isolation. We're bringing the instruction department into that conversation. We're bringing student services into that conversation. And we're talking with our people on the ground, with our building administrators, with our interventionists to say, are you seeing things that we may not see in these numbers that we need to be considering for the changes coming next year? And that work never stops. It should never stop. And, you know, we have to look at a multi-tiered system of support at every single level. So that starts with us at district office, making sure that we're walking the walk, not just talking the talk, so that we're modeling for others as well.
That's awesome. And I'm just really, it's just really fun to just kind of be a witness to some of that hard work that you guys have done over the years. And I know here at Branching Minds, we're always excited to share about the success of our partners and just highlight the hard work of educators that are doing this every day and really supporting students. So thank you so much for both of you to being here and just sharing about your district and all the hard work that you guys have been doing. So thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.